At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Let's see.
Hey there, Beverly Hills 90210 fam.
You know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop?
That's interesting.
What?
Yes.
If you were Donna, what would you have said?
A waitress rather call the police. And she was mistaken 90210 for cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
Look at that Dean Gay. And Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here.
Oh, at least there's one person on this Fakata set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him. I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here!
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your takeaway.
So sit back and relax because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Okay, we are here on the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
So you don't see me at all, right?
No, it's a black screen. You know, you went dark. It's
your
okay.
Your essence just radiates through the blackness.
I can hear you. So, well, I'll just listen and I'll talk. But we're going to try to make sure.
It is a podcast, so it is audio based.
You'll be talking because I'm going to be asking all sorts of questions. Like, how is everything?
Look at your beard. I mean, we see.
How is everything in the dark? You know, it's
for those that are watching, Larry's been having some technical difficulties. So for now, I guess we're just gonna have him as a black screen.
Wait, Larry, can you hear us? Larry, I knew he was gonna be pressing buttons. I saw he pressed the button.
We can do a bit.
Yeah, oh, here he is, Larry. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, great. There's, by the way, Larry, there might be on the bottom there that like that settings button, right? And there's camera.
Yeah, I mean, my son is an IT guy.
Is he with you now, or
yeah,
or
there my camera? Maybe that's.
It's got to be camera. Okay.
I know.
You were at the Dodger game today. How was that?
It was they've been big baseball fan, and baseball has not been kind to the Dodgers in the last couple of weeks. In fact, they've been playing really bad baseball, and bad baseball doesn't is hard to watch, especially and when it's your team and you watch them lose games they shouldn't lose and make all sorts of other mistakes and sometimes just get beaten by the. I'll tell you what I did. I think that. And this was just a long shot thing, and it was funny. Anyway, I gave Lindsay snuck to Vegas on Sunday night to see the Backstreet Boys at the Sphere.
Amazing.
She was a big fan, young. She even was doing a script with them a few seasons back, and she and a really close friend of hers went to the show and got to see it. And I slipped her $50, and I said, "Put it on the Brewers to win the National
League." Your own team. You mean the National League?
Mm-hmm. The National League.
Yeah.
As a long shot.
I don't think it's a bad bet. I don't think so.
I think they have an outstanding pitching staff, and I saw them just our guys could not hit them, and they couldn't hit them because those guys were really good. You know, it wasn't.
Well, that's
we're not hitting. No, it was not hitting these guys, and they got some timely hitting. No one underpitched their guys, so
it's a wild sport. Teams,
I think that this is the one thing that is going to. It won't be as bad as it would have been a few years ago, but the way that the game was, but that you guys in the pennant race that you're in with the Phillies,
it's hard.
You're going to just wear yourselves out. It was like when the Giants and Dodgers had that one season and the Nationals snuck up and took the whole thing. Or it was the Padres. I think it was the, you know, I think it was the Nationals ultimately we won the whole thing.
It'd always be the Braves in our division. So
yeah, you know, the Braves got not that much this year. You're
no.
Okay with that. Low camera, low, you know,
Larry's still struggling with the thing.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing, Chuck. You're playing the Red Sox next. I don't know why you're worried. We can't play these
games. Before we went on air, that last baseball thing I promised, Vince, is that we, you know, Mookie Betts being back in Fenway, if Dave Roberts was kinder and slash maybe a better manager, question mark, Mookie would be batting sixth in the lineup.
Yeah.
But he's not going to do that to him in Fenway, and it's going to be all this pressure on him. And it has been, as someone who adores Mookie Betts, Mookie Betts is my favorite Dodger, and I really wish he was still a right fielder, and I really wish, you know, he was not in this, I never had to see this slump.
I know.
Because it's really painful. He's probably got, is there a physical problem? Who knows? It doesn't matter. You're not hitting. That's all that matters. We got to win the games.
It's the same with Lindor to a degree. When you see him go to 0 for 32 or something, it's just shocking, you know, what's happened. Brian Navarro, it's good to see you. How are you? How's everything up in your part of the world?
Pretty good. I mean, can't complain. While we give Larry some time to figure things out, I did want to shout out a fan of the podcast and of the show, of course. Her name is Carly. She does a blog. The website is entitled modcam1923.blogspot.com. That's modcam1923.blogspot.com. The reason I'm bringing her up is,
Hey!
There we go.
Yeah.
Jackson Mullen.
Thank you, Jackson. I only can get out of my phone. Okay. So yeah, I'm here now.
All right.
Thank you, Jake.
Anyway,
Jackson. Good
idea. Larry. Finally, yes.
Anyway, so the reason I'm bringing her up is because her blog is actually one I would actually sneak peeks at during school back when I was in high school. Instead of paying attention in class, I'd scroll on my phone to read her blog. She's absolutely hysterical. The blog is her doing recap show and poking fun at the fashion. She's hilarious. And, you know, she really inspired me to do all the stuff on Reddit, the watch alongs and everything. So in a way, if it hadn't been for her, I might not be here today. So Reddit's Carly.
Hello,
the blog Carly. Is modcam1923.blogspot.com.
Now, the only thing is, Larry, I'm hearing myself in your speaker. So can you lower your volume?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Better. Okay. They're perfect.
All right, so the idea of this week's show is viewer mailbox. People have sent in all kinds of questions for the two of you that they've always wanted to ask you. Some of them are lame. Some of them are really great. Some of them are kind of annoying. This person...
All comers, even annoying. Maybe especially annoying. We're, you know, can be pesky these days.
Yes, well, let's start there. There's a big... contingency of Kelly and Dylan fans, right? And they get very adamant about their questions and their specificity. Did you mean this? Did you mean that? Why didn't we get this? Why didn't we see that? And so this person asked this question, I don't know, half a dozen times. Why was Kelly and Dylan's kiss not shown in a flashback? Was it filmed? And they also want to know if they can see it.
Well, if we had filmed it, I would have wanted you to see it. And as you say that it's a good scene, it is. And it would have been a good one to do. We just didn't do it. And that's the first thing I thought of. But the point is that one of the reasons we didn't do it is because there was enough heat going on with Kelly and Dylan in the present tense.
Mm-hmm.
To transcend any reason to go back and see preteens, you know, putting the tongue down in each other's mouth.
Right. Okay, so the footage, for clarity, the footage doesn't exist.
Didn't shoot it. Not a bad idea, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, that was very nice of you to even say that. That was someone really pushing the envelope with the questions.
I'm okay. Push away. Push away.
All right. Which storylines were influenced by things the actors were going through?
Well, the obvious first, I'll just jump in here, Larry. The obviously first one for is music with Brian. He wanted to do music. Music could be done. I don't think anybody else came to me specifically with anything like that. Ian did with Milton Berle.
Milton Berle, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, nobody tried to do that so much.
You know, Larry, anything for you in the later seasons?
Well, obviously, the Jamie stuff was locked into his character. Jason playing hockey,
That's right. We did that too in the high school years. We put him on skates.
You want to play to their strengths and things that they do special. Brendan, we just took the acting thing because it was start. It was just something.
And we put Luke on horses.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Western.
In the West.
That was definitely came out of Luke because he had just done the Western. We wanted.
We were allowed them to build in the fantasy life that the series had to go into those. Then it was easier to do that.
The follow up question is to this, and the person asks, how much did real life tensions affect the writing?
On the set, you mean the actors or the
actors? Maybe something the actor was going through.
Unfortunately, I'm gonna plead play the dumb card here. I don't really understand the question. It's a really broad question.
I think the question, Chuck, is if you knew that Donna in real life was going through a weird breakup, would you write that into the show? If you knew that,
you wouldn't want to be intentionally hurtful to someone going through bad stuff. I would not be interested in exploiting that.
I want to answer that question.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I'll answer the question because this relates to actors getting fired. I mean, certainly the Mark guy, certainly. The guy who played the actor, I can't think of his name now.
Mark Reese, you're talking about.
Jason Lewis. I mean, the tensions on the set, actors didn't want to work with certain people, and that informed the writing. All of a sudden, we had a change.
For those that don't know, there was tensions, allegedly tensions between Jenny Garth and, what's the actor's
Dalton
name?
James.
Dalton James.
Dalton
and
James.
And then also Tiffany and Jason Lewis.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that definitely did because we had changed storylines.
I guess the bigger question is you guys are not you looking, because this has been said on the other podcasts and places, like, oh, the writing was pitting us against each other, or, oh,
Wait a second, Pete.
Yeah.
That's called drama, okay? We're going to integrate the characters. Part of what we're doing in 32 hours of television a season is we're challenging the characters. Everything they believe in, the friendships have to be challenged. Otherwise, there's nothing to write. We have to continually bring in new characters for drama. So if we don't turn the characters, at least test what they each have in each other, find those moments which really happen in real relationships, what else do we have? They don't understand that. But that's where drama comes from.
It would be a pretty boring show to see the season of 90210 where everybody got along. There was... Like, what season is that?
How are we promoting that? Everyone gets along this week. And, it's like, come on, kids. Like, we're telling television here.
Okay. If you could go back and watch only one episode again, which would you choose? I'm curious for Chuck's answer on this.
Only one?
Only one episode.
I guess, if you're only going to give me one, I'd have to have two sides of a coin.
Okay, it'd be two sides of the coin.
Okay, so one would be commencement, because that was really a high watermark on the show. It had every the highlight film and the clips.
I know you do love a clip show, so I figured
it really summed up the seasons and stuff, and a big rating, and that was a good one. So I would do that one, and then but the other one, of course, you know, as the Rosen Report will be citing in the volume 8 in July, comes out probably sometime next week. That, you know, it's only rock and roll, but you know, I like it.
That's valid. That's fair. Yeah. That's probably mine as well. Larry, do you have
only rock and roll is the Voodoo Lounge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's called Rock of Ages. I don't think it was ever called It's Only Rock and Roll. It's called Rock
of Ages. No, I'm saying it's the I was just making the line. One of the songs that we use, songs that I cited is the you know, the best Stone song, and because it was used in that our episode, was It's Only Rock and Roll, but I like it. I mean, that's
Larry getting pretty technical there.
Sorry. Yes, I also would pick that one, or I guess the first one I broke. I mean, to me, that was, you know, seminal. It was a great Dylan Brenda stuff in it. It was everyone starting college. It was pretty
good. That was a good episode, no question.
I was very grateful to be able to write that one.
Took a big sigh of relief. Yes, this was going to work. Here is this great script.
I would say, though, I mean, if I was going to go watch an episode of 90210 and it was going to be the one I pick, it's Misery Loves Company, which is the season 3 where Jim Walsh. And then they get the cabana and they're down and he freaks out and he sees, you know, like that's the one that's got so much just.
That's got a lot of high drama to it. Yes, it was. The Washermans, that was one of their best. I don't disagree with you. They went for it heavy.
When you see Jim Walsh looking out at Brenda and Dylan, you know, by the shower kissing, it's epic, you know.
Yeah. And poor Carol just trying to save face there. And cover for a dog.
This is a good one. What was the hardest part of doing this? Casting? What was the thing that you found the hardest to do?
Me personally?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it would have to be. I didn't parlay it into a better overall deal. That was probably I think where I missed, Larry. But
again, it wasn't considered a good show, so it wasn't going to help us.
That is a part of it. Yes, it was very mainstream. Wasn't me. So,
producers of that show.
But in terms of the actual making of the show,
yes,
I was. I've said that I was very lucky to be working with Diane Young because I was a little afraid of casting. I didn't really be in the theater. I wasn't always around actors. It didn't, I was in editing rooms and I was in writers' rooms, whether it was a radio station or as we put the stuff I did, the documentaries and things that I'd cut for NPR. So, you know, we had that, but,
casting, I think is where.
Oh, that's it. But I was a little afraid of it. You know, I didn't know what to say to actors. I only time I got to be in a room with professional actors in a casting session was doing the Beach Boy movie, and the only thing that the producer would say would be things like "nice adjustment" or "this is a some just silly room, just a remark." That you I could say that, but otherwise I didn't know what to think. So I really love that I got to delegate. Long answer, sorry about it. I got to delegate to Diane Young. You know, just bring me 3 to 5 in the major ones. You pre-read a lot of people because I did not. I knew that I would be a little more uncomfortable with it, and I knew that the hardest thing would have to be the writing and dealing with all the elements, the network, the studio, Spelling Company, and all the other demands of production shooting. So, you know, that
she always did a great job, Diane. You know what I mean? She always brought you.
We didn't have too many times. Maybe, you know, we did 143 of them together, and I would say we had less than a dozen times that casting was, you know, came pretty close to getting down to the wire, you know, that we weren't just finding the right, we just weren't finding the right person. It just wasn't coming together yet. We had that a few times, you know, and that'll happen in, at, you know, the, you have to, let's read the part for the third time, you know, because there's also, well, isn't there a limit, Larry, into how many times an actor can come in and read?
Yeah, I'm sure it's even different now. I think, you know, now it's a little different.
Remember, we're talking about it anymore.
Auditions are all on tape now.
I know that's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably because people are uncomfortable interacting with people in live situations. It can be really awkward. I mean, I think that the most awkward moment is there was an actor who came in, and he was in that movie with where they went back and forth in time. It was the British movie. It was with the director. Actor, you know, the Shakespearean guy, the one who's Emma Thompson's ex-husband.
Are you talking, what movie are you talking about?
Time After Time or something, or what was this?
You don't mean Back to the Future, right? You're not talking about
No.
It's a British production.
I just can't remember the guy's name right now. But anyway, the movie was out, and it was kind of controversial, and it was a very small cast, and I went to Karen and I went, and it was the movie to see that weekend. And Karen and I went to the weeds to see it. And then we both liked it. And now it's that like Tuesday morning or Monday afternoon. And he comes in, and on his resume, he's in that movie. And I'm real excited. And I go, wow, you were in the movie. We just saw it. It was really good. And his response was, you think so? And it was, what? You know, and he then started telling everyone assembled in the room and to me his problems with this movie conversation about, you know, just so that guy was not going to get the part. So that was, yeah, casting was its own thing. Editing, I was always had a lot of confidence. Music, I had a reasonable amount to function in it, and certainly learned very quickly. We were just saying this last week that the best advice, you know, you start a new position, you start and there are people who are happy for me who I knew in the business through other places and work for other companies. And one guy, Barry Jossen, who was an intern when I my first job as a staff writer, and in 1980, and he went on to be like a studio executive and someone really capable of doing big productions from the finance side. And he said to me, the valuable thing he said to me, Larry, was, just remember, it's somebody's money. it's a way to do that. That's right. That's right. You can't just be, oh, they're rich, they can pay for it. It doesn't cut it, and especially now with, you know, some of the other, the difficulty in getting stuff going. You better have the money part of it in control.
In place, you know. Larry, how about you?
Well, you know, a lot of the things Chuck was really strong at, which I was so glad about, you know, having to deal with the network and the old man upstairs and that stuff, you know, that I liked all the other stuff. I was very comfortable with the casting because I had come from the theater world and I've been an actor myself. And, you know, the story is where I'm living. So I knew I was more valuable there than anywhere else. So I just always was happy that Jessica was going to go do the pitching to the stories to Aaron. You know, I'd sit in the room and add to the stuff, but she was always
the brunt of that. That
part of it, you know, to my career detriment, I never really schmooze with people or really was, you know,
that's the truth too. Also, you know, it really does get down to that. In those years, I don't know if it's enough anymore. It shouldn't be, but in those years, yeah. If I was single or a little younger, and you'd go out at night and you would have dinner, it was a lot of that kind of, you know, what's your next gig? What's your next gig? I just didn't think that far ahead.
I couldn't stand that stuff, part of it. But whatever. We're all happy where we are, and goddamn grateful. Grateful for being here. These were difficult shows because we did so many.
Was there something you learned through making of this podcast?
Oh, I was going to ask one thing I did learn. I was going to add one thing. Chuck had the thing and he was giving the advice. The advice I got was from a guy named Ken Cook, who was a producer, and I had just taken over the executive producership of the New Gidget. This is like in 86. And he said to me, have you ever been executive producer before? I went, no. He said, well, look, he says, there's going to be a lot of decisions coming your way. Just make them. You can always change them afterwards. Don't keep people waiting.
Good advice.
I thought so. Just make one.
Was there something you learned through the making of this podcast that you didn't know while working on the show? How about Pete and Brian as fans?
Oh, I tell you one thing I learned was the actors were drinking sometimes during the shootings. Jason revealed certainly during the college graduation that they were really drinking then. That was pretty news to me.
Chuck, what about you?
You mean, on the podcast? Wait, can you put the question up again? Because I'm a little confused about it.
There's something that you
that you didn't know about you two guys.
No,
I didn't know where Brian was from.
No, I'm sorry, Chuck. It's asking while you were working on the show, like you learned this on this thing from the podcast about something about the show that you didn't even know was
like the actors were drinking.
Like the actors were drinking.
Most probably, nothing really, comes to mind. I know there, you have it in the opening clip with me being amazed about something, so there it is, but I can't tell you what it is. I'm taking again the dumb defense.
That's a valid defense. For fan wise, I would say that some of the tensions between actors that I would never have imagined,
right. Jason Lewis and Tiffany thing, I had no idea.
I would go one further and say, and I don't know if this is going to be offensive to anybody, but like Gabrielle and Shannon.
Oh, I knew about that.
That to me felt, well, I didn't know about the level of it. So, I mean, I think that's.
Oh, yeah. You didn't do it. That's right. You didn't do the show.
Exactly. Like, I didn't know.
That one you knew about, that was there pretty quick. But when they worked together that summer of the episodes, that was okay. They were very professional on the set, both of them, on that. So dispel that. You want to do you think of, oh, they didn't get along, so it didn't bleed into the work. No, that's not. You can't be a fan of Shannon and say that.
Exactly.
They had to get along well enough to get it on the air and get it through. And if you're satisfied with, the level of the performances that you got from the star of the show, then there's success there.
You know what, Chuck? Now that we're on the subject, I wasn't going to bring it up, but since we're already here, fans want to know, did Shannon actually slap Gabby in that scene?
Oh, yeah.
I figured. Yeah.
That was not...
They wanted confirmation.
Yeah. I think that's obvious. Okay.
You got the clip now. What can I do?
Is there a storyline or episode you wish you had done different?
Well, I'm on record on this one. I wanted, since Shannon was a smoker, I wanted to use her habit on the TV show. Mm-hmm. I wanted a storyline that reflected real life and have it be there for a while and have the quitting be a much bigger thing. Get back into it, quit again, make it an issue for her because nicotine is addictive. And I thought that would have been a really good social statement.
That would have
been a cool thing and whatever. And The only really unpleasant memory I have of working with Dan McDermott was over that. He was not going to go with me on that. He one and done with cigarettes.
So, Larry, anything you wish?
But I would have liked. I mean, that's my answer.
The Ray Pruitt thing just blew up in my face, so I have to say the Ray Pruitt thing. I mean, the way we handled that, we should have done it, been more thoughtful, more mindful of what the repercussions might have been. I mean, so yeah. I mean, Chuck basically just wrecked the room and then left. So, but I got to deal with the damage.
I mean, with things like that, Larry, though, I mean, you can't really expect, you know, how fans are going to react to it. I mean, a lot of it is also just fan reaction. I mean,
you know, who would have thought that they'd take it? And it was, again, fan reaction, like, how is it measured then? I mean, you get some fan mails, but there is no real way to measure fan reaction.
Think of it. Think of it in this way. You got to see it. You know, it wasn't, they'll talk about rape or stuff or this and that on a soap, on those soaps back then. You didn't really see it. You didn't see it in the drama. You didn't see it in our drama.
Right.
So there is, all of a sudden, he's mean. And we've responded. We've talked about that on our podcast when we analyzed some of those episodes that you know, he really was never happy and, you know, morose and this. And, you know, he didn't have to be that way. The storyline fell into that.
I mean, like, the character, Ray, you know, Jamie brought that to it also. I mean, it was, yes, you know, the directing became that way, and it just became that character, which was okay because it was creating drama. But just the way we handled the push down the stairs, perhaps, or maybe there should have been more mitigating circumstances there, so it wasn't so bad.
Well, I just think that
we were going, we were going to get rehabilitated. We were gonna
And also the close identification that our fans had with the character.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, this is such a violation that they take it really personally and they turn on this
the actor.
Who was just reading the role. But I don't understand why he became so toxic in his music and his other aspects of his world. That I don't know a damn thing about. So, because he was really good. The music was good.
We love the music. We like his albums. And, you know, he was well.
You know, it seemed like to be more to do it. Aaron would have found a different way to go. That Aaron would not have given up on him like that. But Aaron was getting on by that point. I mean,
Chuck, he pretty much told us when it was going to happen. He said, the fans think Tori is stupid to be with him. That's what he said. The fans think Tori, not Donna, is stupid to be with him.
That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was the end of that.
Well, it was still a better way to do a breakup on that. I mean, I understand that. You put them together, you break them up, you put them together. But after that, she wasn't with Donna. That basically was, there wasn't going to be anything else that he would be doing. And that's not true. We could have figured out a way for him to become Brandon's best friend.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, could have done that.
You know, I'm not there for that. And I'm not knowing if that would be the solution. But it really was the idea that, and one of the reasons that I honestly, you know, when I look, no matter what I say, in the heat of it, you know, looking back on why do you leave a show? Why did I leave the show?
Yes.
I got once we dealt with Dylan McKay and we went through the demons, we went through the dreams, we went through the world of that, we got through that point and the money comes back, you know, and we take the coda and we get him into rehab, the money comes back and all of that, you know, I didn't have much more to offer. The show was becoming a soapy serial. We weren't doing the social dramas. It wasn't where the show was going, and we would integrate it into the storylines. But what was I, given what my mandate was when I started, what was I really going to be able to do with the stories? The only one I was intrigued by Kelly and the fact that all these that the women were attracted to her. Whole storyline, and what does that start to do? And would we now, could I have ever sold Kelly being bi at a certain point? I don't think I would have sold that to Kelly. So it wouldn't have happened then. But outside of that, there wouldn't be much. There wasn't much I was really like looking forward to do. We, you know, we Gabby went and this, the, and once the Walshes were gone,
Chuck then abandoned the show. Let's just face it. Come on.
Yeah, well,
get over it. You abandoned us.
That's going to be the headline, Larry. Chuck abandoned 90210.
How many episodes? Yeah, well, you know, they just, okay, we're just
no, I think really, again, if the show had a better presence, Chuck would have stayed, but he wanted to kind of, you know, make his mark, and that was not going to, that was not enough to make your mark as a writer. It did not have respect.
This is Chuck, part of our problem. Well, we made this was choices. A question, too. Did Luke, knowing that Luke was leaving the show, did that also weigh into your decision to leave 90210 as well?
No. I knew Luke had the extra additional episodes because of the original deal that we put together with him. But and Spelling did at the very end in a very kind of awkward way. He and Jonathan Levin, you know, saying, can you just stay for those episodes?
Huh.
And we were already booked going to Italy, you know. And
that's what happened.
The vacation, you know. The vacation cuts the seven episodes.
Lake Como. I wanted to wait. I also wanted it to end in season seven, and he would not commit to that. And that was, you know, like college would be it for all of us, you know. And that would be the seven.
That would have been a valid idea, you know.
I mean,
But we didn't. But again, he wasn't, as Larry knows, and you know, and fans. This is what the show became. So there's nothing that would. It's like, well, what would you have done differently? Well, what I would have done differently is I would have accelerated how to find stories out of college. Interesting shit going on in colleges. What's going on in colleges? We did a lot of that in seasons four and some in season five. I would have just maybe, but Spelling was no more college, no more, you know, student politics. You didn't have to do the politics so much, but the school, what the school is as a resource for storytelling.
We did a lot of that stuff. We did a lot of college stuff because we, you know, we had the TV station, takes over the TV station. So we were able to cover news really. We had some social issues here and there. I can't remember them.
This question came up a bunch, and there's a variation of it too. If you both had come back to write the ending of the show, how would you have ended it? The variation is, if you had come back to write the reboot, what would that have looked like?
Yeah. One on Reddit, another variation on Reddit was, if you could bring the whole cast, original cast back for the finale, how would you have done it?
Well, the Donna David wedding was correct.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was a big bet. That was nice.
If you got to just close it off, you could have had a Brandon Kelly wedding also. I would have been unhappy with that.
Didn't Dylan and Kelly jump into the mix at one point or not? Or my fans?
No.
When Dylan came back,
they were back together, but they didn't get married or anything.
Kelly? Yeah. They pretty much. They string the idea along for the whole, like, that last season. It's kind of like, will they, won't they? And at the end, it's like, yeah, they're like, all right, we'll give this another shot.
The writers apparently thought they had a few more episodes to do something.
But I think in the reboot, this 90210 that stood alone on the CW, didn't Dylan marry Kelly in that one or have a baby or something?
Had a baby, I think. Yeah, no marriage, but he, had a baby with her, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Do you have any deeper thoughts on what you might have done? I mean, someone says, would you have made Brandon and Kelly endgame as well?
I would have, yeah, but I would have also had them have great careers going forward. Again, it's the thesis when I went in there, I was taught, was that these are ordinary kids living extraordinary lives. And somehow in the seasons after I left, it was just extraordinary kids living ordinary lives with stupid little papers and the shop girl. And that, no, it should have been thinking much bigger. And for the fantasy,
really game, took out the fun of it.
It would have been great,
right?
You know, Brandon of all things should have a big fucking position.
Exactly.
You can keep him all in LA. Steve should have been like a big agent in a sports thing, and you know, Brian would be starting his career, and then it would be big things.
All of the above. There was a lot to do in a post college show, But you had to strengthen the show in college, I felt. And to some extent. But losing Luke as the actor, you know, that's a big hit. You know, we were lucky. I you know, and we planned for it, but you know, so that's goodbye to Brenda, but Tiffany steps in and Tiffany has these scenes to do and these storylines to be in and these character functions to be. So there was a lot to immediately supplant the pain of saying we've just lost this actress. But losing Dylan McKay, to fill that void, that's big. I wouldn't have wanted to do that.
That's very true, Chuck. You know, I hadn't thought about that until now, and you're absolutely right. You know, losing Shannon was harsh, but, you know, Tiffany really filled those shoes perfectly. But with Luke, it's the whole thing.
It's a whole personality.
Nobody really stepped up and replaced him. We, you know, a lot of people tried. A lot of people came in there, and, you know, you had characters come and go. But no one really was substantial enough.
What are your takes on the fandoms inside the fandom? Brandon and Kelly fans versus Kelly and Dylan fans versus Brenda and Dylan.
You guys will have to educate me on that. Larry's a little more plugged into fandom. I greatly appreciate it. And I'm glad you watched the show. And I'm sorry that most of you can't see it with the original music.
But did it surprise you when we started doing this
podcast? The episode is just atrocious now. It's just terrible.
Oh, I saw something the other day.
I don't know. I mean,
what did you say?
Everyone should have fun interpreting the show. There shouldn't be a death cult going at the other one or a death wisher. No one's really right or wrong. I have my feelings, which I've made quite clear. I always felt it was Dylan and Brenda and Brandon and Kelly. But everyone's entitled to their way of thinking of it. You can justify it. I'll justify mine if you ask me.
But Chuck, when we started doing this podcast, were you surprised that people cared? When I started doing this podcast, I just assumed fans would be like, I love all three of those versions of those things. I would not think 30 years later that people would be hellbent on this Brenda and Dylan thing or this Kelly and Dylan thing to the.
Oh, it was just stunning to me. Right as we were starting the podcast, I remember, or maybe it wasn't during the early episodes, there was somebody I actually had to befriend.
Same.
I remember that.
And it was because they could not accept that IRL, Shannon and Luke didn't get along too well.
Right.
In seasons 1, 2, and most of 3. You know, that they got along in life afterwards is to their credit.
Sure.
But the filming of it was, you know, there was some, you know, bumps there. And so when we tell you that they're talking about this true love that couldn't ever change, you know, it really is... it's got a wackadoodle quality for me a little bit.
I would agree with that. I remember in the beginning, we didn't talk about Brandon and Kelly enough, and somebody came at me accusing me because I liked Kelly and Dylan together of preventing you and Larry from talking about this. I was like, I don't give a shit, like on that level. Like, it just hasn't come up. It's episode 8. It's going to inevitably come up. So it's a little bit shocking to me, the level of the sincerity that people are taking a show from 30 years. You look at the actors, they don't even look like the actors.
I think it takes the fun out of stuff a little bit. Yes. So, I mean, it wasn't... The thing is that I think that fans understand, that certainly the fans, the super fans that we've known through the podcast, who we appreciate so much, that this is, you know, that there's a fun quality to it, to the community, and it isn't it wasn't what we were thinking about. We were just trying to get through the seasons, and it was the immediacy. It was a very vibrant business. It was a very big time. We were Fox. They came out of nowhere, and we were there at one of the flagships. It was very exciting, I'm not thinking about how's this going to play in 2025. I'm living in 1992, 1993, 94, 95. I leave the show and that goes away.
Yeah.
And that I'll always, you know, regret that. But the fact is that, you know, in that time, I'm not thinking about the long-term plays of anything. I assumed we'd have the music. I would assume that that it would be what it would be. And, you know, we did sell on the first round of syndication, and it didn't syndicate at a price that they expected it would get.
Mm.
And so I think they may have thought that that was then limiting the asset value long term.
Interesting.
So,
okay. Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, the fan, also the Brandon, Gabrielle, and Andrea fans are pretty fanatical. But I think one thing we discovered from the podcast, and also all the cast has discovered, is how popular the show is. Because since we've had our podcast, everyone got into the 90210 business. It's fantastic to see. The kids do nothing but the conventions all over the world.
Yeah.
There's podcast galore after ours. And I think we realized, and to our surprise, that the show is incredibly popular. And that's why they all united behind it. All of a sudden, it was, again, we're out in the sunshine on the show.
Yeah. Okay, Chuck, this is a very hyper-specific one. And I don't even know if you're going to know the answer. Whose idea was it for Brenda to mix PB&J in a bowl before putting it on bread?
That is a great question.
It actually is a great question.
It must have been Darren. It must have been. It certainly wasn't me or Karen. We never made ours like that.
Uh-huh. Maybe the director.
Uh-huh.
I always figured that was a Shannon thing.
I think I'll give Shannon the credit on it. It's got that kind of Tennessee thing, you know. You take the peanut butter, you take the jelly, you get out the bowl with the spoon.
That makes sense.
Claire had some great dry one-liners. Were any of those inspired by your own sense of humor?
Never.
This is a tough question for me to hear, because now all this Claire stuff that I fell for is all Larry and Chuck
and Chip.
This is hard for me to hear.
Good. Yes, exactly. She did not improvise. Put it this way, she did not improvise. She was not an improviser.
But
I enjoy. That's one of all the people we can create a character, cast a character, have the actress come in and make this character come alive. She did that in those first scenes with Jay. In season three, that was season four. I mean, yes, when he was in college and she.
Right through to the.
And it really spiced. And how much she spiced up season five, you know? Here's a question I want to ask Larry. I mean, let's talk about Claire. Do you think you did the good use of her, or should there have been other storylines for her?
I think we had pretty good storyline with her, and I think she could have gone on, but I think she wanted to leave, and other people wanted her to leave. You know, it wasn't great, but I think
by the end,
you know, let's just say she did. Look, she was part of the Beach Apartment, so she always was with the girls, which really put her right in the middle of the action. So she always had storylines. We never really, certainly didn't do to her what we did to Kelly and Donna. You know, they didn't get like drugged out, raped, or whatever. You know, all the perils that they fell those girls. I think Claire kind of missed that. But we had a lot of emotional stuff with her, you know, with her father, with her mother, who she loved, who was gone. And we did mind a lot of that stuff in the last two seasons of her family history.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, do you use the Chancellor a lot?
Was that? Oh, yeah, we did.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, Steve's mother and the Chancellor become an item. And, of course, he's over his head totally with her, with Samantha Sanders, his real wife in real life. It was real great fun to watch them together. And, of course, it affected Steve and Claire's relationship because she got pissed off at him because her father was, you know, getting dumped. So that worked out well, I thought.
I think you guys did a good job of utilizing Claire through the show. What I think I like about Kathleen acting in the series is that she's always can ground everything that the other actors and characters are going with in some sort of authenticity, right? Like she can, if Donna's being stalked by David Bao's character, you know, she's able to bring Donna here and be level-headed about what's happening in all of their lives. If Kelly's hooked on cocaine, she's able to see the irony.
She has no filter in a way. Yeah. She would say the things that no one else wanted to say.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think we did use her pretty well. And it just, again, people, you know, she didn't want to stay on the show. You know, everyone's worried about the show. They didn't have a great profile.
I think that it's one of the smartest things that she did, that she had this instinct to know that I'm at the end of the run. The college is over. My character should probably leave. I want to act in other things. I don't want to stay on this show. Like you guys have always said, should end at season 7. I think one of her gifts is an instinctual knowledge of timing and when to walk in and walk out.
Pete, I hate to bust your bubble, and I'm going to say this. She was not going to get picked up anyway.
They offered her deals and she kept turning them down. So I feel like,
okay, well, I that's not
I oh, I think heard. They were, I think at that point, I think they were just, I have no idea, but I can conceive of it. I wasn't there, so it has to be in my imagination. But the amount of wheeling and dealing that came out of the mister's office to keep that show going in seasons 8, 9, and 10. How many concessions? What did they give back? What did they? Everything gets really hazy and foggy for me in the relationship, you know, the fiduciary relationship between me and CBS right about this time. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, like, let's move the chess pieces really fast.
Well, yeah, so he also, what was Spelling? Spelling was owned by Blockbuster, and then they were not owned by Blockbuster.
No, it was Viacom. It's CBS now. Yeah. So it's Viacom. You know, they owned it.
Can you imagine Blockbuster bought the show? How ridiculous is Spelling?
Well, wait a second. You know who owned the show when I started with the Spelling Company? You know who was what the ownership did? They imported Chiquita Bananas.
The fact that Blockbuster isn't
Linder. Linder from Cincinnati.
Yeah, no, you know, the Blockbuster that's Cincinnati mob.
Cincinnati were the people who, that's where the ownership was from, Cincinnati.
The Blockbuster's not even a company. That's shocking.
No, Heisinger. They did not see far ahead, I guess. They didn't see Netflix coming up in the
Blockbuster inside should be Netflix right now. Do you know what I mean? That they should have seen that and said, let's do that next. Okay, here's another one. When Donna asked David if Ariel was his first time, he said no, it was another girl, not Ariel. Who?
I don't think he says that. I question that.
That didn't happen in seasons 1 through 5.
Yeah. With Ariel. Then he says no, like they had slept before.
He slept with someone else that wasn't
Ariel. No, he slept with Ariel before, I thought.
Okay.
I'm with Larry. This is a misinterpretation.
Misinterpretation.
Of course.
Reject. Bad question. Terrible question.
Our Valerie fan wants to know, was there any Valerie stories you wish you got to do?
Me?
Either of you. I feel like you guys did everything you possibly could with Valerie.
Yeah, Valerie got play. She was with every guy, kind of, even Steve, I guess, in a way. Yeah, I mean, Steve certainly played around with that.
No, I would have put it back with Brandon. It was too good. But
that's Brandon was great too. That would be great
for the opportunity.
For the season 8.
To put I may have fought you guys on that. Together, right, that'd be really funny. I thought that was working. That looked great. That was what I was most intrigued about coming back from what we did in Palm Springs, that they were making out there.
I'll tell you, a lot of fans were disappointed that they dropped it on the season 6.
You know, one thing I was it was not something that the Smurfs of that scene. It took a while to get it, but we stuck in there and got the Smurfs. I don't know if you remember that. On the TV, when they're making out, is a Smurf thing.
Well, was that you, Larry? Did you want the Smurfs?
Yes. It was nostalgia for them. They were kids.
I got you.
Together. It was great nostalgia for them.
Do you know that the Smurfs, they released a Smurfs movie last weekend, and it was a worldwide bomb. Oh, wow. Tony had done all the other Smurf movies. There have been three of them. And they had run its course after three. But, of course, the geniuses at Paramount, the people who had controlled the fate of 90210, decided to do another Smurf movie, make it a much bigger, a lot of names, because, like, if you know that James Corden is doing a character in the voice in the Smurf movie,
I'm running,
you're going to go see that.
I'm running away the other
way.
I'm
not, but...
Somebody told me that. I'm going to see the show on Broadway with him. I went, no way.
Here's a technical one.
Okay.
How did the writers map out story arcs, longer or 3 to 4 episodes? How did they plan to integrate others?
Well, that's the secret.
Everything was working on the calendar, don't forget. Our show ran through the real calendar when it was September where you are, September where we are. But we knew November, February, May, those are the money balls. Those are sweeps. So all your storylines had to peak there to give the network chance to promote the show and grab eyeballs and get the best advertising rates they could. So that was the game. And so we would have long arcs, and then there'd be shorter arcs within them, you'd think about. But basically you had a whole arc to get to the first sweeps episodes, and then you'd continue on like that. But that was the goalpost always, for me anyway.
Chuck?
Well, we had the one really, really long arc in season 4, started Christmas time when they showed up with and the whole Suzanne and Noli and anyway, you know, that whole storyline. So that to pay that off, then at the very end of the season was my favorite of the narrative arcs.
I think you're right. That was really like 20-something episodes where we...
That was one that it all was real and it all moved and it was, that one was a good one. But mostly it was... but also, look at, coming back and see... After he loses his money, how many episodes before he does the melt, drives his car off the... Mm-hmm. That was 8 episodes.
Yeah.
7 episodes where he just disintegrating that way. And then there's that whole period of regaining his strength, but going back down to the Cabo being the, kind of a seminal big episode.
Yeah, I mean,
and speaking of Cabo,
what we call standalone episodes also, which would have some running things through them, but the episodes themselves would be kind of special. Like, what would be one?
I'm going to just say this now. I'm going to come in here.
Go for it, Chuck.
We're talking Cabo, and we're talking Crushing Cabo. How many fans? I need. Not only do I need fans to get this book, I need those of you who have read this book and who read the Rosen Report to give me a review.
Yeah.
I need my own personal reviews. And this is a really good book. I do it and give it a review in the volume 8, which is coming up, maybe this weekend, doubtful, probably maybe just Monday or Tuesday next week.
In fact, there is a reference.
And I appreciate it, Brian. You always send the stuff in. Larry, appreciate it. Pete, your stuff on the Stones was really good.
I need people to buy the book. Buy the book if you love me. What was the old app?
Buy the book even if you just like them.
The guy in the 60s who said, buy this book or I will kill the dog. Anyway,
National Lampoon did that, yeah.
That was the National Lampoon.
Okay, here's another one. Was there anything you wanted to film but was off limits from the network?
Cigarettes.
Oh, yeah,
sure. That was
plastic surgery.
What's that, Larry?
Who would have done the plastic
issue? This was never talked about.
You wanted to do
The kids were so young. I mean, it didn't. I mean, maybe
they were all having plastic surgery every freaking season.
Our characters?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so, well, yes, they were having
the actors.
I don't know about Gabby, but certainly. Yeah, there's some breast going on.
Well, Jenny too.
I would say so. Yeah, I would say definitely Tori. She had a couple there through the thing. She had nose jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
well, I know Tiffany.
You
know, then
Beverly Hills kids have plastic surgery. It would have been a plot line we could have done.
No question about it.
Jackie Taylor, I'm surprised we didn't have any plastic surgery.
Hmm.
Or Donna's mother would be great. Yeah, she'd be great. Get a boob job and get a lift. A butt lift for Felice.
I don't know if that would have played so well in the on Pico. No, but the other ones, maybe. It's just,
I remember we came back one season, I forget which one the guy said to me. He says, "Wow, I feel like I should be getting dick surgery after all these girls having surgery every summer." I'm not going to say who said that to me.
Brian, do you have any Reddit questions you want to throw into the mix?
Yeah, I have one. This one's a good one for Larry. Kari01 from Reddit asks, if Dylan had stayed for the full sixth season, how would his storyline progress and how would it affect other characters like Kelly with her coke problem?
Well, I guess, if he stayed, he would have been married to Tony. That's how you have to play it. So you have to go with that. They'd be the unmarrieds and he'd get called away and Tony would get very jealous because you'd have a triangle there between Tony, Kelly, and Dylan. It would be very good. You could really work that. And he could still be working on getting the old man, her father, and it would still keep that storyline going probably for the whole season.
Season 4 and 5 are my faves, but season 6 is soapy. Chuck, what do you think of season 6 of what you've seen of it?
What I've seen of it?
Yeah.
Have you seen any of it, Chuck?
I saw one episode when it aired in the first season. I have seen clips. And I had a job on season 6. Larry will know this, is that I got every script and had to give my notes on that. That was, and Sony was really pissed off. What do you mean you got another job? I said, but that was my, severance. And, it was very difficult in the beginning. Steve and Jess, it was very difficult for them to do that. And then I barely had any, and I just didn't do it much.
You didn't
send the season that really Steve and Jess really started that season strong, and then they had the marital discord happen. But
season 6?
Yeah.
No.
Well, I mean, earlier, but they tried to be getting the executive producer. That was the first year they were executive producers, season 6.
Well, it was tough for Steve. I mean, he didn't ever get the – he was walking into a place that wasn't – Paul was really – you got to go through Paul. You got to get along. You got to make that work. And Steve didn't sometimes remember that.
Yeah.
Here's a fun one. Will you guys consider doing Super Show 2 on October 4th?
Well, I mean, everyone's so busy making money on the show now. I don't think we get the cash without paying them.
The only way I think it would work, I'm open to it. It would be, we would have to do it. I would want to do it with the other podcasts.
Yes. Yeah, that would be good.
90210MG.
Podcast like Live Aid. 90210MG. Yeah, Live Aid.
Yeah. 90210MG.
We raised money for something.
The Oldish podcast, Brian's podcast. I'd want to do it like where it was a group activity. And so we're all celebrating the show together and everybody's bringing guests event.
We have time to get Tiffany there. We got a couple of months now. So everyone listening, we have to find a way to reach Tiffany so she can get her flowers for the show. She really did great work. She really helped, propel the show in the seasons 5, 6, and 7 for me anyway. And I don't know why. What's keeping her from taking a run around the winter
season? Yeah, well, I have nothing but love for her from season 5. And I know she knows that. So what happened after that? I don't know.
I didn't talk much to the actors as much as I could avoid the talking to them.
She's probably avoiding the question about Jason Lewis or something to do with Jenny. You know what I mean? It's like we have no idea about that.
I believe it's that. I believe it's the other girls. Yeah, I believe she.
But that has nothing to do with us. Do you know what I mean? Like we have no relevance to us.
I know. So Brian, we need all your Reddit people to help us. We got to do like a full court press on her and really flesh her out because she can't be a zip code denier.
It's just not acceptable. Renee, if you're watching, got to help us out. You must have some connections with Tiffany.
Here's one. Larry, can you share or an upload or post your unproduced Hulk Hogan movie script?
I probably can. Yeah, I can. I can. I have it somewhere. That's funny. Where would I post it?
Are you guys surprised you are still doing the podcast?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you get to talk baseball, basically. But no, as far as the Hulk Hogan, where would I post it, Pete? Where would I send this thing?
I don't know. We will have to.
I actually do have a digital copy of it.
I would love to read it myself.
So let me know. I'll send it to you, and then you can figure out what to do with it.
Okay.
Okay. Thank God Brian's on now, bring some other authenticity from the Reddit board, which is
for sure. Awesome.
We did start this 90210 craze, new craze where we all kind of, you know, push this.
It's important to note that the Lily was helpful in the very beginning, getting people excited about this podcast and Darren Martin. And then Melanie transitioned us into this like really fun era of interaction with the Hunts and helping us to even get a super show together or America's Zip Code. And then
in Planet 90210, look what we did there. I mean, we just got all these international fans there just dying to talk about it.
And then Brian, you know, bringing the Reddit from the audience from Reddit. So the people that helped, you know, us in this process have been critical to continuing it, and the super fans of this podcast to have continued to express interest in, like, I would think Chuck every once in a while will go to a Dodger game or something, will say like, we've kind of talked about every episode, yet then there'll be something like this or some other thing that pops up that's interesting. Well, and you know,
we should use the word community because we also did give people a chance to join this community because share their love of the show.
Yeah.
So that's really what's the most gratifying thing about the podcast is that we have this large community internationally.
Yeah, I think everybody, you know, all the community found a deeper community. It's interesting to see them go to Comic Cons together or whatever those are called. Oh, and yeah. And then, you know, they've never really met sometimes, and they're meeting through, you know, this podcast, and now they think that they've known each other all this 5 years, and now they meet for the first time at Steel City Con or 90s Con or something like that. And or even us meeting Caitlin's and at Munce's wedding, like all of those things are.
that was crazy, Chuck. That was so much fun.
That was a fun, crazy thing. Yeah.
Any other ones Brian, anything else that's pressing?
I think this is a good one to wrap it up because we are discussing, you know, fans and the legacy of the show. Popcorn Slurry from Reddit asks, it's a long one. I want to know what they think about the new generations discovering the show, particularly social media posting of screenshots and the way particular lines have stood out to them after all these years. I've seen so many younger people who don't watch the show reposting screenshots from 90210 on Instagram because they see it as iconic, funny, or culturally relevant. The ones I've seen posted a lot are Donna's I'm Sorry I Got Drunk, Brenda's Have Fun at the Gynecologist, To Be a Bitch or Not to Be a Bitch, It's Not Hippie Witch, It's Twin Peaks and It's Very In, Jackie during the, well, thanks for the advice, little Miss AA. Not really a question, but I'd love to know what it's like for them to see teenagers appreciate the show in such a modern way.
That's like when they ask a band, what do you think of the younger generation?
I just think we're obviously classic because this generation loves classic, because just look at every commercial on TV is for a song from 60 years ago. It's crazy.
Neutrogena just did that commercial with, the finale. I don't know if you guys saw Neutrogena did a commercial with, they pulled a clip
from, I didn't understand what was happening, but I saw that. Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, cool.
It's a scene where David proposes to Donna.
I did see that. Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it just shows, now it's cultural iconic.
But I don't know the extent. I learned something from the post because I didn't know that. I don't think that much about social media. You know, I was early, Larry knows, I made some early forays into trying to be in disruptive culture and disruptive technology and how that impacts social entertainment. And, you know, we tried to sell a show years ago called Google It. And it was a great live show. And we could not convince Google to appreciate that they were more than a tech company. The name was more than a tech company. Mm. And that the idea you could do it, like, you know, it'd be like doing polls of this or that and this and doing it all in real time. And it was an interesting way to do something that interacts between you start online and then you're on broadcast by the end of the week. It was an interesting, the technology and the culture couldn't move quite so fast.
It is.
And after that, I wasn't so interested in it, really.
I think it's great, though, that the kids are watching it because they've heard about it and stuff, and just like discovering classic rock music.
It is a very interesting element to the fandoms now, because with social media, you do have a degree of access to the actors and, you know, sharing a post and them liking it or something from a long time ago or them doing an impression or something, where I don't know if you were a fan of something a long time ago without that the Instagram or social media presence. There was nowhere other than maybe being a member of the fan club newsletter. There wasn't sort of that access.
Well, that's what I think. I think the most intelligent comment I ever read about why did this show work the way it did? And it's because it was from Brian. When he basically said we gave them a peek into what it looked like, it was the lifestyles of the rich and famous before there was that, before social media took away, you know, we opened up the mystery of what life would be like in that
ordinary kind of, with an extraordinary lives.
Yeah.
And they're also, Chuck, to your credit and Karen and the early years, was this thing of not really having seen a show that identified with you so much. You know what I mean? Being in your own high school in that era of that time period in the 90s, and to see people wearing the outfits that we were wearing and dealing with some of the subplots of relationships and crisis and stuff. And so this sort of feeling of being connected to
it was a show from the point of view of the kids. It was the first one, the point of view of the kids, not the parents.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, this has been great, guys. Mailbox, and by the way, the mailbox is full because there's still so many more questions. So if we wanted to do this, we could do a whole. There was like 60 or 70 questions that came in. I only got to like maybe 20 or 5 or so. So
if you determine that there's enough to do it again, we can do it again.
Yeah, and so now that you've all seen it as well or have heard it, come back around and ask us more questions.
Okay, so and now the push. There's Larry's book.
And for me,
I write a lot about 90210 related stuff on the Rosu Report. And you should, if you want to see what I've been doing, just send your email to Brian or Peter, and
yes,
we'll go from there.
Brian, is there anything you want to plug?
he already did.
His friend.
The blog.
Oh, yeah. His friend. Yeah, he did. Yeah. I have nothing this week, just this podcast. And okay. And we'll have some stuff soon with the pizza documentary and all that. But right now.
I'll see you all. I'm going to eat my dinner. I'm so sorry I was eating during the show.
It's okay.
I'm so hungry. I got hungry late.
The tablet.
You know, it's 9 o'clock. Right.
I hope you figure out the tablet of it all.
I don't know what happened there. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.